study how man lives on the moon. I study how moon lives on this land. Yeah, yeah. La 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 la. Babylon is finally falling. When the stars start fall upon the earth, Babylon is truly falling. When the stars start fall upon the earth. Ah, yeah, yeah. La 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 la. Whoa, whoa. Ah, yeah, yeah. La 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 la. Celebrate when baby begins to dance. We celebrate when daughter begins to prance. We congregate when mommy begins to weep. We congregate in Grammy's eternal sleep. Ah, yeah, yeah. La 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 la. Ooh, ooh. Ah, yeah, yeah. La 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 la. Babylon is finally falling. When the stars start fall upon the earth, Babylon is truly falling. When the stars start fall upon the earth. Ah, yeah, yeah. La 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 la. Whoa, whoa. Ah, yeah, yeah. La 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 la. Indian people always calling, calling out for his own rightful name. Indian people are always praying, praying out for his own rightful way. Ah, yeah, yeah. La 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 la. Whoa, whoa. Ah, yeah, yeah. La 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 la.
Hey, this is still me, Coral Reef, and it's Freak Radio 101.3. You've been listening to Native Roots. I'm going to make an announcement while I can. We have a guest coming in any minute now. Well, tonight, going down on downtown, is what's called Sleep Crime Vigil. Guess I'll just pause this. Tonight, from 6 o'clock on, go down to the courthouse. Go down to the courthouse steps, the one on Water Street. It's all night till 9 a.m. to protest the incarceration of Ed Fry, the attorney, who's been challenging laws criminalizing the basic human right of sleep. He's been facing 6 months in jail and's now been sentenced, so he'll be submitting to the Sheriff's Department Wednesday morning. We're gathering to show our solidarity and to protest this compassionless law. Sleep crime, California Penal Code 647E, means 6 months in jail. Whoa. Yep, that was quite a deal because it took 2 years to come to this, just for sleeping, you know. So I hope you show your support. Call Ed Fry or call the Huff Line. I know that Robert Norse will be down there. And I may even show up later. I'm not even really able to right at the moment. But you're tuned to 101.3 FM. And if you have any news on the situation, please call in 427-3772 and let me know. Thanks, and another couple songs, and then on with our guest, who's going to talk about algae diesel, among other things, right? Okay. Well, that was the end of that CD, but I'll put on some promos, and we're going to get clear here. Studio.
Music should be free, so should radio. This is Ian from Fugazi, and this is Radio Free Santa Cruz. Music should be free, so should radio. Down
south. Over here. No, no, not there. Over at the radio. This is Rising Moon. Don't turn me up or a big nasty corporation might block my message. Listen to
Small World Radio.
Tuesday from 9 to 10 p.m. on Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101.3. Over.
This is a tip of the stockbroker. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, www.freakradio.org, 101 FM, reclaiming the airwaves since 1995. Say no to corporate oral smegma.
We're here live on Free Radio Santa Cruz, also known as Freak Radio, community-based FM radio station, which people certainly here know, operating without an FCC license since 1995.
What's up, y'all? This is Grouch, your favorite simple man from the Living Legends crew. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101 FM. Keep it independent, unlicensed, and non-commercial, y'all. Fuck the radio.
In a world where one nation's sovereignty is under attack, where real danger lurks around every corner, a world where confrontation must be met with brute force, and the march of humanitarian aid must be stopped. In this world, one nation has managed to do exactly what it was trying to prevent. Operation Overreaction. Starring the Israeli Defense Forces, Free Gaza Flotilla, Benjamin Netanyahu, Hamas, and 1.5 million blockaded civilians. Also starring in the biggest supporting role ever, Cold Hard Cash. Operation Overreaction. Because sometimes you have to do exactly what you're trying not to do.
How would you like your water filtered?
Like this?
Or like this?
StopClearCuttingCalifornia.org.
And welcome to the show again. We have a live show tonight, and I would like to introduce my guest, Mr. Guest. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi. Yeah, it's Xavier. I guess I fix broke stuff, and I'm an inventor. I don't call myself an inventor. Technological innovation specialist. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? I think I'm going to shut the door. We're going to be talking a little bit about what he invents, because he's an innovative technological person, Smith. If you want to fill him in on anything while I'm gone for the next 10 seconds, please.
Fill in the dead air? Yeah. All right, well, let's see. I got a shop that I'm going to hopefully be opening up at the Green Station, fix some broke stuff. And I'm not really, I'm just trying to, there's going to be a lot of things I'll get into tonight, but we're going to perhaps talk about algae, biodiesel, and other things. And so, thus that.
What's your dire concern today, this week, and right now, what you're doing?
Oh, yeah. Well, I do have some dire concerns, but one of the things I'm noticing, let me see if I can do this without rambling too much, but I've noticed that people on the political left and the political right oftentimes fight each other, and I find that the top 1%, I think they're probably apolitical. We have a tendency to think of them as right wing, and I think in a lot of sense, moneyed interests are more Republican, but I always try to find commonality with people, and sometimes it comes back to bite me in the ass. But that's what I always try to do, be a statesman first and try to find commonality with people.
Yeah. In that way, what do you view that anarchism today is closer to? Neutrality, left or right? Because I have an opinion.
Yeah, well, let's hear your opinion. I got plenty of opinions, but I'm trying to learn to listen more.
You know, I'm borrowing it from my radio partner at the moment. It's his opinion that anarchists are being kind of swayed by the right. Because the left, you know, let me see if I can formulate this. Anarchists, if they don't want to have any kind of you know, I can't remember what I was going to say about this.
It's okay, dead air is okay. Deep cleansing breath.
All right. Well, if you can't get to true consensus, it's not really true. So there are good groups that really do care enough to get to true consensus, but it seems like anarchists become kind of as bad as the ones that would want to dominate the other ones. Like it's a popularity contest. The meetings I've been in, and the left and the right, I don't even know the difference anymore, except anarchists, because they're not trying to do anything, they're just going to make it worse. No. And I really think that the purity of anarchism is where it's at, but I don't see it being promoted in a true way, in a true sense of the word. Like I think it used to be working pretty good at Free Radio when we first started the station.
Well, freedom is a constant struggle. You don't just set it and forget it. It constantly takes nurturing.
Yeah, constantly. With people to care about it. Yeah.
Well, is it right if I jump in here and
yeah.
I'll do some of my rant on anarchism, I guess. back in the 30s, I think it was, in Spain, there was a group called CNT. They were like anarchists. And they were against the fascists. And the thing is, they fought the communists almost as much as they fought against... They were both fighting against the fascists. But they fought each other. And one was like... The communists were more towards centralized control, as I understand it. And anarchists were more localized, you know, individuals. And you see this a lot on the right wing today is individualism. And it's good to be self-sufficient and... things of that nature, but you form like cells or work groups to get things done, and you can take that all the way to the national level. You can have federations of individuals who have like minds, but I find that a lot of times people will say, well, communism, that's where the state takes over the means of production, you know, the corporations, the manufacturing industries and stuff. And you go, yeah, that's true. But then you ask yourself, well, what's fascism? Well, that's, in fact, Mussolini, I think the Italian word fascism is like a bundle of sticks. It's harder to break than a single stick. So you get all these corporations that, like, in a community, in a little hamlet or something in Italy, you'd have the local industry mogul. Under fascism, he'd be made the mayor or something because he was the guy that provided the work. And so basically under fascism, the corporations, the means of production, takes over the state. So under fascism, the corporation takes over the state, and under socialism or communism, the state takes over the corporation. In both situations, you have the corporations, the manufacturing industries, the state, and in a lot of situations, the church, all arrayed against working class people, the environment, consumers. So either way you lose, it's the same thing.
Yeah, same loss.
Yeah.
Yeah. The individual is what seems to be in the most important part of each anarchist mindset. Although there are some that do want to work together, like I said, and form a true consensus, but there are many little divisions, so it ends up being not that way. And people just go along with the one that has the strongest voice towards the end. But you know, to form a party, let's say a political party from anarchism, because they don't believe in that, they're not going to have that much power to say what's going to happen. So it might as well just be an own onto itself, you know, its own governmental and non-government thing, its own kind of you know, rulership, where they have to set themselves aside from the rest of the world. You know, I don't see the Occupy movement wasn't into getting a political candidate together. Now, some of the people there who thought they were liberal wanted to, you know, get people motivated to do that, and then as it turned out, those people were shamed or shouted down or made to look foolish for trying to have that kind of mind, that kind of group mind. And what's left is what's left. In Santa Cruz, we have our own version of what Occupy was and our own version of what anarchism is, too. We did interview I think that I'd have to go back in the files and look. But we had a really wonderful person on here, and I can't place his name right now because I've got to take my memory, like my Aricept or whatever. Okay, can you recall that true anarchist who came to Santa Cruz a couple of years ago and gave
Utah
a speech?
Phillips?
Not him.
No, anarchist.
And he lives in Berkeley now. I'll just go look him up. Anyway.
You know, for the last 5 years since I lost my house, I've been kind of a feral human, so I've dropped out of the activist community. I've been just trying to... In fact, I spoke at the Santa Cruz County under my legal name. Not Xavier. But I spoke at the Board of Supervisors meeting this morning about that issue.
Okay, would you like to say what you said?
As I can remember it. Yeah, well, I'll get into the, like, inventing. I essentially, I'm an inventor, an electrical engineer, but I chafe at saying inventor because it's a lot of people are wrapped up in the ego kind of being an inventor. And they're more about, they don't really have ideas, they latch on to, what was that?
It's Barry Pateman.
Oh, cool, Barry Pateman. I've never heard of him, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But, anyways, some people, they call themselves inventors, and they're looking for what I call 15 minutes of fame on YouTube for a 200 mile per gallon carburetor that runs on water. And the stuff that I do is real science. Some of it is outside the box science. Like, I think there's something to the idea of cold fusion. But a lot of these, you know, things where you take water and you electrolyze it, and in other words, split it into hydrogen and oxygen, and then pump that back into your carburetor, and that's supposed to give you more mileage. It's, to me, it's just the latest version of perpetual motion. And I don't say authoritatively that it doesn't work, but it's just there's so much real science out there, and I find that, you know, years ago I was working on a fuel cell membrane. DuPont makes a membrane called Nafion that's $300 a square foot, and I've developed a membrane that's pennies a square foot. And
how did you do that?
That's a secret. It's a trade secret.
All right.
No, it's, I tell you, one of the components I used was Saran Wrap, just regular Saran Wrap, and I did some, treated it with some chemicals to make it essentially have like sulfonyl radicals hanging off of it so that it would conduct protons through it. So I don't know if anybody understood that, but but it worked, you know. And the thing is, I went to this symposium in San Jose years ago, and there were people from PG&E, you know, the utility companies and oil companies, and anytime somebody stood up and talked about proton exchange membrane fuel cells, these utility people just went nuts. Oh, it'll never work. And they were touting things like solid oxide and molten carbonate fuel cells, which take like, you know, 1,000-degree temperatures, and they require an infrastructure, something that a utility could do, but you really couldn't do in your backyard. And if you look back at like Nikola Tesla, he was working on something. Whether or not he actually was able to do this or not is, you know, I'm not going to debate that, but he believed that he could transmit huge amounts of electrical power over the air. To me, that sounds kind of dangerous. But J.P. Morgan, who was one of his funding sources, asked him, well, how do you meter how much energy each consumer uses so you can bill them for it? He says, there's no real way you can do that. Well, darn if his funding didn't just dry up right there on the spot. Because you got to recognize the interest of your investors is about controlling the valve. If you have sunlight that falls in your own backyard and you capture it and use that for yourself, you're competing with PG&E, and they don't like that. So, looks like you want to say something.
They don't like that.
No, they hate that. But the thing is that the point I'm trying to make is that I've spent a lot of my life. A good example is I have a piece of equipment that I picked up. It's probably older than I am. It's a vacuum vapor deposition system. It's got a glass bell jar and vacuum pumps and stuff. It was originally designed for evaporating small amounts of gold onto electron microscope specimens. And I picked that up for like $75, I think, just for the scrap metal price. And I refurbished it. And today the scrap metal price is probably about $200. But if I were to want to go out and buy a piece of equipment to produce high vacuum, to do what I'm planning on doing is evaporating or sputtering or minute quantities of platinum group metals onto fuel cell membranes, you could also use it to make your own solar cells. I've got one of those. And when you work in a company, you want to do something like that. And I can't remember the name of the movie, but it had Russell Crowe in it, and he was playing a scientist for the tobacco industry.
Yep. And I can't remember either.
But it was a great movie, and the concept was, and I think that a lot of times scientists and engineers who work for companies, they develop this kind of Stockholm syndrome. And like, you know, Patty Hearst, you know, your captors or whatever. That's a whole other subject we can get into. But I think engineers, a lot of times, they know who pays their mortgage. And when that person who pays their mortgage says, cigarettes don't cause cancer, up is down, black is white, left is right. In fact, Malcolm X talked about this with his speech about the plantation owner, the house Negro, the field Negro. Same thing, is you got these people that they will tell you that black is white, up is down, left is right, tobacco doesn't cause cancer. And if you're an engineer and work in a company, you want to do something, pretty soon you start hoarding up technical equipment so that you can do stuff on your own. And unfortunately, when you lose your house, you have to find a safe place to put all that stuff, and you've got landlords who see, I don't want to turn this into a poor me sub subject. You know, that a lot of people, you see this happens. The county does something to that they don't like, and the next thing you know, they'll run for board of supervisors, and it's like, poor me. Nobody cares about me. I'm a crusty old guy now, or I'm getting to be. But you don't make it about yourself. You make it about the community, and you're just trying to help the community. And that's what I'm trying to do. And right now, I've got all my stuff in an equipment yard in Corralitos. And there have been other people down there that the landlord has allowed to paint cars and sell used tires. You know, some of these people are my friends. He has allowed people to live there. I even lived there for a little while because I couldn't afford to not live there. But as soon as the county came and said there's a problem, I immediately found another place to move. And I'm broke and I'm getting older. I can't keep moving my stuff around. And I'm one of the last people to move out of there because I'm not making money. And it's like the landlord is threatening to bulldoze my stuff. And this is, you know, artworks. And I say artwork, I mean like prototypes and stuff. And it's ideas that I've worked on my entire life. And it's just going to be bulldozed if I don't figure out how to find a place to put it. So that's kind of the plight that I'm in right now. That's the poor me aspect of it. But
would you like community support to get someone to volunteer if they have a way to save your stuff? Like,
well,
where to store it?
In the short term, you know, I don't expect anybody to, you know, come and help me. But I would like to have a discussion with people who, you know, it's like everywhere I go, it's like, oh, you're just a hoarder. Yeah, I'm a hoarder. But the thing people don't realize is a lot of the landlords I've been dealing with, they're hoarders too. They hoard land. And they bid up the cost of land to the point where people like me can't afford it. I used to have a house. And I could put stuff in that house. And now I don't.
Yeah.
So. But, go ahead.
What you just were describing, all the prototypes you are working on, and hope to also implement them at the green station, or is there a way you can do both there?
Well, the green station is a prime location. The guy who owns it is a good friend of mine for many years, and he's got a vision too. You know, he's wanting to sell biodiesel out of there, and we're doing a pretty good job. I say we. I don't work for him. I'm just renting a space, and it's used primarily for storage. I hope to get business licenses and start fixing things there. But right now, I'm taking some of my most important things that I can get out of this equipment yard whenever I have. I've got a 14-foot box truck that I just registered, and it's going to... Anyways, I don't want to get too much about me, but maybe what I should do is talk about some of the ideas that I've had and developed.
Obviously, we need to know what you are doing.
Yeah, and I'm really operating. The other problem that I have is I'm operating in survival mode right now. I'm operating somewhat from the reptilian brainstem, and that's a whole other theory I have. That versus the cerebral cortex, which gives you delayed gratification and compassion for others and things like that. And a lot of times people will see the manic nature of me. I'll work late into the night and say, oh, he's on drugs. And I go, no, actually I'm not. I'll pee in a cup for you if you want me to. But what I found is if somebody believes something about you, they're going to believe it no matter what you do. You can prove it to them otherwise. And so, you know, it's like I've given up trying to... If somebody doesn't like me, I'm just going to walk away and go somewhere else. Some of the ideas that I'm working on right now are solar-powered refrigeration. I'm working on an idea for a... I was originally going to be a bike, but I think it's going to be a three-wheeled bicycle that's going to give you pedal power. It's going to be electric, hybrid, and I've got... I don't know how much... It seems obvious. I'm just going to say it because I'm tired of hoarding my own ideas. I'm just going to throw them out there. I've got an idea for, this sounds kind of crazy, but a weed whacker motor is basically a two-stroke motor, which they're very dirty. And but it turns out they're pretty efficient because instead of every fourth stroke being a power stroke, every second stroke is, every downward stroke is a power stroke on those. The piston fires and it creates energy, so it's more efficient from that respect. The problem with a two-stroke engine is when the piston is going up, it sucks fuel and air into the crankcase along with oil to lubricate it. And then when the piston comes down, it forces that charge into the upper cylinder, and some of it goes right outside, right out through to the exhaust port, unburnt, and pollutes the atmosphere. So what I'm thinking about is initially it's going to be gasoline power, but I'm going to try to run it on biodiesel later, raise the compression ratio. It's going to be turbocharged, so it's going to just blow fresh air into there. I'm going to seal the crankcase and put oil in it. Then I'm going to... as I said, turbocharge it, the piston comes up, and then you fire, electronically fuel injected, fire a minute quantity of biodiesel into the piston just as it's coming up, and it'll fire. And so it'll be very clean, very efficient, very small. It's like 22 cc's, and it's going to run a small alternator, and that's going to charge a small bank of lithium ion batteries. So you don't have to have a huge bank of batteries for mileage. You're just running biodiesel to keep the batteries charged, and that's another idea that I have. There's just tons of ideas that I have, and I've spent almost no time doing any of these for the last 5 years because I've been trying to protect my stuff.
Protect your stuff so that you can work with them again?
Yeah, it's been delayed gratification. It's like, oh, I want to work on this. But no, I've got to move my stuff from this previously thought to be safe area, which is now unsafe, to a new safe area. So I guess my appeal to people is not, you know, if you have a new place for me to put my stuff, because, you know, it's... people see people like folks like myself and say, yeah, it's a slippery slope. They'll let you put your stuff here and you'll just junk up the place. And it's like, what I'm looking for is somebody who more long term I can talk with and maybe seek investment funds and, you know, give you an interest in whatever I develop and work on one of the projects and maybe have some kind of a facility to do that one project and move just things for that there. And if and when it comes to fruition, you get a chunk of the proceeds from the development. So that's kind of more what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for somebody to save me, because everybody, it's like in this economy, every man for himself, every person for themselves, you know? So.
Excuse me. Yes. Well, we're drinking not beer like Uncle Dennis. We're drinking bubbly, though.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've recently discovered energy drinks, and I got this Rockstar. Is one of the few that doesn't have... I disdain artificial sweeteners. And I got one called Energy Recovery without reading the label, and it's got sucralose and asphaltame or potassium or something in it, and it's some people think it tastes like sugar. I don't.
So. Did other Rockstar have different ingredients?
The one that I usually drink for energy doesn't. Yeah, there's one of the few that doesn't. But I don't know what it is. It's like you think energy drink, you think, you know, caffeine, probably some, you know, herbal stimulants,
yeah,
and sugar.
Grind.
It's an energy drink. Fucking put sugar in it. You know? It's okay.
Fast energy.
I don't understand it. So.
Commercial free radio. Here we are drinking. I don't know. I'm drinking 7-Up. What's that? And he's drinking chemicals.
Yeah. So we were going to talk about algae biodiesel. Were you in a hurry to get into that? Or?
Yeah, I'm in a hurry. No, really. I want to hear everything that you have to say on the subject. And also how it went at the Board of Supervisors.
Well, I didn't. There was actually a group I bumped into last night at the Resource Center for Nonviolence.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an issue involving the sheriff detaining. He said that he was not going to use the jail for detaining people prior to deportation. And as I understand it, I wasn't there, but he made a verbal and a written commitment not to do that. And he didn't follow through on that. And he's using the jail to detain people prior to deportation. One of the things, issues with that is that you don't have due process. You know, it's just for non... I think it was, the issue was if the sheriff picks somebody up and they haven't committed a crime, or if they've committed a misdemeanor, they end up in this detention situation and they get deported. And the issue is, it's like, no, don't use, we have due process in this country, you know? And I think that's what the issue was. And I saw these people last night and hung out at their meeting, and they were there at the Board of Supervisors meeting today as well. And I support, you know, their cause. But I came to speak about mine, and I had to leave fairly soon after that. So, yeah, I spoke my case, and I don't know if it'll do anything, but you got to start speaking out, you know, on issues like this, or people don't know what's happening.
Yeah. I've been there myself. I forgot that now the Board of Supervisors are meeting again, because I think July was a hiatus. I had been going there to talk about the smart meters and all the towers are building, different things. I'm only affected by a little bit of a Wi-Fi if it's really close to me. It kind of whacks me out, but I have wireless at my house, and they have it in the building next to me, and so I have to sit away from the computer a little bit. I can't. But as far as our sheriff, who's Philip Wowak, still, they have an initiative to recall him, and I don't know if it really made it anywhere close to getting enough signatures to put it to really recall him. But he's not well liked on many fronts. Many groups have issues about what he's doing, sort of taking the law into his own hands. But he has more power than he thinks if he wanted to use it. He's just kind of playing side that it seems to get him the farthest, like they all do. And how can anybody really get through to the sheriff by going to the supervisors? What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'll speak to that, but before I do, I want to ask you, might I avail myself of some of your delicious 7-Up?
High fructose corn syrup.
I prefer that to asshole fame potassium sucralose. Is that right?
Yes, it's very high and bubbly.
Yeah.
Guess you get.
See if I can pour it into my container.
I feel
here
like
without.
I'm craning my neck here. Anyway, it's.
About winding up on my lap.
Well, the reason I asked you to come in here is because I was trying to find out about what was happening since I'd been out of town for 5 days. And Robert Norse pointed out that you had been to the Board of Supervisors talking about biodiesel.
Yeah, basically, that was my angle. I didn't mention that, but that's one of the things that I'm thinking about doing is I went to this place where I've got my stuff is zoned for agricultural. And it's got greenhouses and, you know, nursery there. And as I say, this guy is politically pretty much more to the right than I am. And he hates liberals. And I say, well, you know, you're talking to one. I shouldn't say that because I do understand, you know, I understand some conservative viewpoints. But I got along with him really well because you know, I didn't talk like a wingnut liberal, and I understood some of his issues. But I went to the planning department. I think it's on the fourth floor, third or fourth floor. And I just asked him if I could find some agricultural land in that area and use it for growing algae with the intention of using it for rendering it down for biodiesel, for oil, for biodiesel. And they seemed to think it would be okay, but it would cost like $2,000 just for the preliminary. And I'm not sure if I'm using the exact words here, but I think it was a environmental impact study or something like that. $2,000 that I don't have. And
in order to use that, discarded oil, or to use not discarded oil, but some of the
like waste vegetable oil from cooking, that kind of thing.
Yeah, what's there to study about it? It's been studied to, you know, it's good.
Well, no, what I was planning on doing.
Environmental study.
They have these polycarbonate Lexan plastic panels that have like two, they're kind of like corrugated cardboard, except they're clear. They've got little chambers in them that are rectangular chambers, and they're clear. And you can basically take put a PVC pipe on either end, cut a little slot in it, and seal it to each end, and you can have like a little manifold, and you can pump water through it with nutrient, and inoculate it with algae, set it out in the sun, and it won't even touch the ground. You know, it's like, and that was one of the things I was thinking about doing. Issues with biodiesel, see, I'm kind of, I've got attention deficit disorder.
Okay.
I jump around a lot. But one of the things about biodiesel is rupturing the cell walls to get the oil out. The other issue is it's 95% water, 5% oil, you know. So, but it's a good solid 5% oil. And it grows like gangbusters. So so I was thinking about doing that and basically just not trying to figure out a way to provide some income for this guy. And not have to move everything, just the stuff, you know, some of the things that were related to that I could leave there. But, you know, you're just seen as a wingnut, people pat you on the head. And this is, I was going to speak to that issue with the sheriff, is I've noticed this over and over and over again. Right-wingers will notice this, like people, developers, you know, people, contractors will notice this when they go to the planning department. They'll pat you on the head and let you think you can do something, but they never really let you do what they want. So I understand they're, you know, but that happens to us left-leaning working class people all the time. These right-wingers do it to people like us all the time. They pat us on the head, tell us what we want to hear, and they go ahead and do what they want to do anyways. And I've seen that over and over and over again. So the only way to get there's two ways I can think of to, and really it's human nature, you know. It is, if somebody doesn't like you, if they don't understand you, I always say, never mind. If I have to explain, you wouldn't understand anyways. And just walk away. But it's like the sheriff says, yeah, we're going to pay lip service to, you know, it's like, yeah, we'll stop detaining people and deporting them. And he doesn't do it, you know. Then the way around that is apparently he's made this commitment in writing. The way to do it is make it be a legal document that contracts, you have to have something in exchange for something. You can't have a one-way contract. It's got something in consideration for something else. And then you get a breach of contract issue. You can do that, and then it's a breach of contract. It's a legal issue then. The other way is, as I understand it, the sheriff is elected in this county. You know, but the thing is, you have to do is you have to find. I keep bringing it back to this. See, people talk about sexism and racism and all these isms.
to me, it's, I'm not denying that these exist. They do exist, you know. But to me, it all boils down to class. The class analysis, you know. It's like owning class, working class. And whenever you make it an issue about race or gender, you hive off a certain group of people who could potentially be your allies. You know, it's like a lot of times, you know, white Anglo-Saxon men, they don't feel any support from the political left, so they go over to Rush Limbaugh's camp. It's like, we have a lot in common with them. I was at what's the heck is the name of that group? Inner Light, I think it was. You remember them? A friend of mine I bumped into recently suggested I go to one of the things, and it was neat. I agreed with about 80% of what they said. It was about privilege. But one of the things that I brought up is there's a movie had Edward Norton in it. It was called American History X. Mm-hmm. And I use the N-word. I'm not going to use it on the air tonight because I, out of respect, you know. But in the movie, Edward Norton played a skinhead who murdered a black guy who was stealing his stereo out of his car in his driveway, and it showed the from both perspectives, and he went to prison for that. And a black guy in prison who ultimately became his friend and probably saved his life said to him, and this is the quote that I like, is, "In here, you the N-word," you know? And what my point is that if you have privilege as a white person in this society, you have more opportunities. But there are certain enclaves, certain subcultures, where you don't have those privileges. In mainstream society, it might be an overall benefit, but to acknowledge, a good example is like the gay, lesbian, transgender community. If you can build a big enough enclave, you have your own economy, you're better off, and you can actually, and this is what I advocate, is if you don't like a system, build a parallel system next to it. But to not understand that, like, if I, a heterosexual male, go into that community, I am a second class citizen in that community. You know, I go outside that community, maybe I have privileges. I don't feel like I have very many privileges these days, but, you know, everywhere you go, there's certain enclaves that you have that give you, you know, privileges within that community. And so what we need to understand as people is to understand the areas where we do have the superiority in the privilege area, and be allies with those other people who don't have those privileges, but not feel like second-class citizens. Now, I don't believe in being an apologist for being white and male, but recognize there are situations where I can be an ally to people. But when somebody tries to guilt trip me for being white and male, it's like, homie, don't play that, if I can say that.
Yeah, so somebody tried to guilt trip you for poverty as a male? It seems to be like...
Well, throughout my life, it's happened a few times. It's like, I'm not saying poor me, I'm just calling attention to that mechanism, because one of the things I learned in paganism, which is I'm kind of, you know, that's kind of like pagan, Buddhist, Taoist, you know, things like that. One thing I've learned in paganism is that I am not the center of the universe, but I am the center of my universe, and everybody else is the center of their own universe. So I see things from my perspective, but that's just my perspective. And I try to honor other people's universes, is, you know, but whenever they start, it's human nature to see things subjectively and think you're being objective, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Because it's hard to get that perspective if you're given your perspective, trying to be objective, because people are always going to have some comment about it and have their opinion, and then they don't think you're being objective. It's just everyone's perspective of what objectivity is.
Yeah.
No, it's really, I don't know how you can help community without expressing your own, you know, self. And you're part of community. And do we get off now?
No. I'm just, what I'm trying to do here is balance. I just talked a lot, and I have a tendency to do that. But I'm trying to listen more. It's like, but give you more space to talk, you know, because if I don't shut up, I want to give you space to not just talk, but formulate an idea and then have the floor is what I'm trying to learn how to do more of.
Yeah, well, if anyone else also has any comments, call on in. And I'm going to take a little musical break so I can take care of a couple things, and then we'll be back. And this is the Tangerine Dream Team Show. Alternately, Free the Land Show when Free is here. And I'm Coral Reef. Call in 427-3772, and we'll be right back. Tangerine Dream Team. The show is Tangerine Dream Team, and what we were listening to was this new CD somebody left. I don't even know the name of it.
The knob just fell off your knob there.
Well, we do have some technical little quirks. We got knobs that fall off. But you could send in some help. You know, if you want to send in money to cover all this equipment, it's P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz 95061. Or call in and I'll tell you, you know, you can do PayPal. Go to freakradio.org to do that. and you'll see the website. So with Xavier, I'm wondering what I should ask you next. You're a scientist, but you find that because you're not a classical scientist, but you do know all the principles, that people are skeptical that you know what is appropriate to do and how to get things done, and so they end up not, you know, giving you much credit for what you're doing. And need a lot of place to experiment, and only need a lot of place just to even conduct the best parts of what you're doing to accomplish anything. And what is it that about the Green Station that's beneficial right now to this?
Let me see. Well, I mentioned I'm changing positions here. I'm low rider now.
Okay.
That noise you heard, the microphone rustling, was, anyways. Yeah. Well, I mentioned that in the last 5 years since I lost my house, a house that I own free and clear, go figure.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a sad state of the condition of things these days.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't know if I should... I don't need to get into the history of the free radio or
land
and all that.
Ownership. Oh, yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, I did want to bring up the fact that you were instrumental in part getting some of the station happening here.
Yeah, well, there's two people. You know, I've seen articles in the Good Times about free radio, and the two people that they don't mention are Tom Schreiner and myself. Tom Schreiner funded the thing.
God.
And I was sitting in a friend's house. In fact, a friend who was ultimately renting from the guy that owns the Green Station was a friend of mine. He's a ham radio guy, and this was like... early 90s, the Gulf War, I don't know if it was before the Gulf War, it was around the time of the Gulf War, just noticing that the news media doesn't, the stuff that you see, it's like, who are you going to believe, me or your own lying eyes? I saw this, and the news media, local anyways,
yeah,
doesn't... It twists things. And, you know, with the first Gulf War, I was sitting around and I was like, what we need is a pirate radio station. And there was this guy who'd built some rudimentary transmitter, and this guy, Kenny, you know, dropped it in my lap, and I says, oh, this is interesting, but it's going to drift a lot. It's only like a watt. 1 watt, and so we'll play around with it. Then I found out about Stephen Dunifer, and
Steve Dunifer, who was in charge of starting
Free Radio Berkeley. Berkeley, right? He built phase lock loop transmitters that were digital and stayed right on frequency, crystal controlled. That's not a drug, by the way. real good filtration on the output so that you don't have interference with air traffic control and all that.
Yeah.
And basically, whenever you're doing like some kind of civil disobedience or you find something abhorrent in life, you don't do other things that are illegal that they can use a red herring to distract you from the real issue, which is free speech. So we got this transmitter, and I built it, and had a meeting at Loudon Nelson. It was like seven of us, I think it was, some people from Earth First and Food Not Bombs, and rented a space at Loudon Nelson. A bunch of people came. We set a transmitter and a microphone out and says, this is the communities. And that's what happened. And there's all these other stories about how it happened. But
I remember because I was at that meeting at Loudon Nelson.
And there was even, it's interesting.
I admit it.
I wanted some people from, there was people from the political right who wanted to be involved with it, and I welcomed that, but they wanted everybody to sign a loyalty oath, and it's like, dude, you're not in charge here, you're welcome to be a part of it.
Okay.
But then they says, if I can't control it, I don't want to be a part of it.
Yep.
And they walked out. Where was we going before that, though?
Well, I was asking, I don't know. Let me think. Oh, yeah. So what about the Green Station is helping you?
Oh, yeah.
Because you want to use the Green Station's facilities to promote yourself.
Well, what happened is the last 5 years since I lost my house, one of the things that I did was I was disillusioned with the political left because everybody's struggling and there's no resources to actually help people do things. Right. And I kept hearing all these right-wingers harping about how they don't want the government to help people. They want, it's the church's job. So, a strange thing, me, a politically left-leaning pagan, joined a right-wing Orthodox Christian church.
Joined,
yes.
Uh-huh.
Hung out with and started hanging out with. And, you know, some decent people in there that I care for and love, who we just don't see eye to eye on. It, like, one of the things that they said was, pagans, witches, they worship Satan. And I listened to this for a little while, and then I says, you know, actually, no, that's not true. Me, because I used to be in this group here, we never, ever worshipped your Christian devil. And it's like, oh. So they stopped saying that directly to me, but I'd hear them in a crowd of people in a gathering saying the same exact thing to other people. So, but the thing is, the reason I joined this group is because I wanted a community of people with some wealth who wanted to help poor people, you know? And
yeah,
they chewed me
did
up and
they?
Spit me out.
How did you choose that group?
It's a long story.
Okay.
I'm not sure how relevant it was. It involved a girl, not in the church. She was actually Jewish, a woman that I dated prior to that, and they didn't work out well, and I was just looking for something to distract me and do good. And so I was in a vulnerable position, I guess. But one of the things that this group did was I had this mobile home that had a large yard. It had an addition, so it was like a house. It had a big addition on it, and it had like it was off to the edge of the park. It was right on the river. It had a hot tub. It was really beautiful. And I had stuff there, you know, but it was like, so did a lot of other people. And it was well put away. I had a shed for it, and it was up to code. And their tree fell on my shed, crushed actually two sheds that totaling, I forget what the square footage was, but it was within the code. Crushed both of the sheds, it just squarely landed on them both, made a big debris field, and they saw me out there taking pictures of it, and I said, oh, he's going to sue us, so we better sue him first. And then I, be careful when you sign a stipulation, because what that is a judge coercing you into doing something that he doesn't have the legal right to do, and once you sign the stipulation, then they gives them the legal right to do it. And this church group, this guy was a contractor in the church. He was the de facto plantation owner. He was defrocked as a priest, but he was in the group. And I used to work for him. He said he'd help me. But what I didn't realize is he was going to help me comply with the landlord's wishes, not with the court order. And so he conveniently waited until 2 days after the expiration. I'm like, calling him up saying, can we deal with this so that I don't lose the case? And he waited until 2 days after that, and he came over to help me comply with the landlord's wishes, not the court order. And boom, I lost my house that I own free and clear. And so I'm getting into a lot of poor me stuff that's pent up, and I apologize for that, but that's the story. Basically, ever since then, I've been living like a feral human, trying to bounce from place to place, trying to protect my stuff. And as a feral human, you lose your ability to network with people.
Yeah.
And you don't stay, I don't build things, I don't design things, I don't invent things, I don't schmooze with other people. And I just started realizing I need to get back in touch with community. And I was living in Aromas for a while too, and I moved back up to Santa Cruz, bumped into some old friends, and
The Green Station is a great place to meet people who are ecologically minded. So that's kind of the thinking there. And thus that.
Right on. Well,
again, I apologize. I apologize for all my.
Maybe
I'm venting some.
Had
some
a statement about the state of organized religion and again, how politics and religion are intertwined, not even necessarily consciously, but sort of. So when they think they're doing good for you, if it's not compliant with the law, then it must be bad.
Well, what you were talking about, Earl Coral, was like the meetings that we have. You have free radio and personalities.
Yeah, I started that.
There's always people. A lot of times they're male. You call it alpha male, but the alpha character.
Yeah.
One of the things that I noticed is that I'm going to go off on a rant here. I know I am. I can feel it.
I was looking at the
reptilian
rabbit.
Brain, okay?
Okay.
You see people, homeless people, it's like, why do we distrust homeless people? Because they're needy. It's like if a lifeguard goes out to save somebody who's drowning.
Yeah.
You got to be careful that person doesn't bring you down with them.
Right.
But you can have compassion for them, but you got to set boundaries. And what I'm finding is addiction is a good example here, too. You think about fats and sugars. Fats and sugars are two things people get addicted to. They're sources of energy. Whatever creative force that designed humans and animals gives us an endorphin rush. There's all kinds of oxytocin and other chemicals that tell you, give you pleasure when you eat fats and sugars, because it's a signal that in a scarce environment, those are things that give you energy. Sex, same thing. Gives you pleasure. Propagates the species. But then there's these other things, like why do people buy like brand new SUVs and Hummers and stuff like that, you know, and big TVs and big houses? Well, it makes other humans want to be like you. You get to be the alpha monkey who you get other people around you to, you get to set the agenda. And they'll follow you, and you can say, I want you to do this, and you delegate out, you become the boss.
Yeah.
And if you've got stuff that other people crave, they want to hang around you to get some of that goodies. And that's, you look in the monkey community is a good example of that. Is the alpha monkey decides who gets to hang out in the tree where it's secure and safe and gets, you know, the food. If you get kicked out of the tree, you're in trouble. And human beings feel safer whenever they're in a community. So that's, I think, a lot of the reason why people have an addiction. It gives you an endorphin rush to have stuff that other people want.
Ah.
So, and that comes from our reptilian brainstem. That's the amygdala. That's the area that where addictions come from. And there's nothing wrong with the reptilian brain, because that, in a scarce society, that brought us to where we're at. And the way I explain this to Christians is they've got the Old Testament and the New Testament. You think of the Old Testament as like the reptilian brainstem. Hmm. And the New Testament is kind of like the cerebral cortex. It's delayed gratification, compassion for others, stuff that humans are capable of. So you take that part of your brain and have that be the master, whereas your reptilian brain, you don't deny it, but it has to check in with the cerebral cortex to find out if this is socially acceptable. So, so to me, what does that have to do with meetings?
you mentioned that there were monkeys and people, and they order other monkeys around.
Yeah.
And, one word that my partner always likes to use is so the person's tendency, if they are like that, to be, whether they're a minionizer or get other people to do what they don't want to do, or able to hand off their tasks to someone else. And And if you're aware of what's going on, then you can be more of your own self and individual. But otherwise, it seems like groups are handling meetings is where there are certain ones and personalities that are able to get other people to, you know, whether it's their charisma or their maybe this ego, nasty kind of way of getting other people to do what they don't want to do. But meetings are for organized kind of thought so people can work together ideally. It's just that tendency for those, if we are in a reptilian brain state majority of the time, that's not easy for people to, you know, be individual, kind of just comply with the rest of the group if it's easier. Or if they do speak out, they have suffered consequences for their individuality, and then they learn how to, you know, rebel or cope with that or escape. So I have this quote that I was going to read if I can find it again. Any comment on that?
Oh, yeah. Do you want to invite people to call in again?
Yeah. You know, until we get more wattage on the air, a lot of you are listening on the internet, but if you do have a thought and you're listening, call in at 831-427-3772. We'll be glad to talk to you. Probably be here another 15 minutes discussing this, and it's Freak Radio 101.3 and freakradio.org.
Really?
So the quote, a lesson in Earth civics. What occurs when human beings live in intimacy with the Earth? The kind of society we formulate is likely to be a participatory, democratic, egalitarian, leisurely, ecological, and sustainable. And that's from a new book. It's called My Name is Chellis, and I'm in Recovery from Western Civilization by Chellis Glendinning. She explores what the creation of a culture based on a respectful relationship with the living planet might look like. Drawing on examples from nature-based cultures, Glendinning lays out social practices that shape and are shaped by close connection with the Earth. Okay. Well, when we get away from living close to nature, I don't know. You know, the monkeys, the bonobos, the chimps, they all have different ways of coping with each other. Chimpanzees are highly competitive, aren't they? We know what the bonobos are like. Human beings, okay, we have so much DNA, just like the is it the chimpanzee, or is it the...
I don't know which one it is. I do know that, amazingly, we have a lot of DNA in common with even plants.
Sure.
It's like... I don't know how all this information goes together to make up a human, and a human looks different than something else. It seems like you'd want to use more of that... etch-a-sketch to differentiate him, but I guess yeah.
Wow. So what do we have here? For some reason, I just have to comment on the part you said about you were trusting another human being to complete the, you know, dotted line, or just you trusted that what that person was doing is helping you, whereas the person is helping himself.
Well, yeah. See, one of the things that I don't know. There's certain people that you just look at and you see, like an abusive relationship. You know, you go, wow, in retrospect, that person really took advantage of me, you know? And when it's happening, you you notice it. But it's like, another thing I was going to say is, I think about it, abusive family dynamics, religious cults, pimp-prostitute relationships, judge-defendant relationships, the corporate boardroom, you know, the CEO versus the scientists and the other workers. It's the same dynamic. It's the same dynamic as the kid in the school who tried to convince you that he had a better use for your lunch money than you did.
All right.
I remember in high school, I was the nerd, and there was this guy, usually it's a jock, or somebody with lower intelligence, that they have a tendency, these types of people, to get a gut reaction of a feeling, and think that maps out onto everybody's experience, and it's their job to point it out. So I had this jock once tried to pick a fight with me, accusing me of saying lewd comments to a cheerleader. And I said to the guy, you know, loud enough for everybody to hear, because he's broadcasting that I did this, I've never said anything to this woman, this girl, you know, this cheerleader. Nothing. Never said anything to her. That's not what's important. He's trying to write a narrative that would be plausible, that everyone would believe that the nerd did say that. And why would he do that? Probably because he did something embarrassing, possibly to this cheerleader, and wanted to distract everybody from it. And I see that same dynamic over and over and over again throughout my life. Is somebody who's ashamed of something, and they're a bully, and they want to, everybody will believe it, of course. Now he's homeless. Look at him. He's like a scruffy muffin now. Everybody will believe this about him. And even people, well-meaning, I went to this Unitarian Universalist church that I hang out with. Decent people. But, you know, I came in there one time with a friend of mine who was driving, and I had an energy drink in my hand. I was kind of captive because I was in his car. And he was drinking a beer. He wanted me to drive so he could drink his beer. And I said, I'm not going to do that. I'd rather you didn't. Just put it in the back. It'll get cold. Put it underneath that pile of clothes. It'll stay cold. And he had to drink it and drive. And I was drinking an energy drink. We went to this Unitarian Universalist church that I go to sometimes. Guy who somewhat knows me, kind of belligerent in my face. And I just couldn't figure out why. And then I realized, oh, you think we're driving around drinking. You think that I'm the kind of person that would do that. And I says, no, this is an energy drink. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, my friend over here, yeah, he's drinking. I didn't want him to, but I'm kind of captive here. The new people that I hang out with, you know, culturally it's okay to do that, some people. And it's like, I don't like it, but I'm not the boss of him. You know? So, but just people would assume things about, and I don't realize that they're, the same thing with being a scientist. You know, I use, I refurbish things. I like to refurbish things. I'll use hydrochloric acid to remove rust from things. I use phosphoric acid, too. It works pretty good, too. Remove lime from, like, ceramic glass and, you know, things like that. Works great. I use lye oven cleaner to remove grease and oil from things. You know, I used to love to cook when I had a kitchen, and I'd get like this schmutzy kind of oil on the frying pan. You take a little water, a little bit of lye, and sprinkle it in there. You gotta be careful, you don't want to get it in your eyes. And you boil it, and the grease just comes right off. Well, unfortunately, apparently, those are two things that people use for drug manufacturing. Stupid me. Don't realize. And people are looking at you all the time and making judgments about you. And it's like, I don't know. Life is hard. Life is really hard.
To know? Be an individual, yeah. Because people, they have, whether they believe it or not, have kind of fixed ideas about what things should look like, what it's supposed to look like, even if they don't.
Well, there's a guy, Kevin Mitnick, who's I apologize, Coral. I'm dominating this conversation.
Oh, no, you're the guest. And sometimes I ask more questions, and some people, you know, you're welcome to open up.
Okay.
I just would like to
wrap it up.
Make it. I could wrap it up, or we could conclude by, or we could make some analogy to, you know, what the whole human condition's problem is.
Well, one thing I do want to mention is I was down at the homeless what is it? Is it Coral Street?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's I had an idea, and I'm going to see if I can seek some funding for this. I bumped into a guy who is from Central California, like Oxnard area. He and his girlfriend are up here, and his brakes are sticking. And it's like I'm trying to help him fix them, but it's like I got almost no resources. And I'm thinking, what if I were to be able to get some resources together to get a building, you know, with a roll-up door, place where you can bring cars in and fix them, teach homeless people how to fix broke stuff. And, you know, they roll into town, their car breaks down, help them. It's kind of like the bike church for everything from cars to, you know, even if anything that you have that you need to rely on and you can't afford to buy a new one, teach people how to fix shit. And that was an idea that I had. I was constantly coming up with ideas, and that was one of them. So I'm going to see if I can pull that together.
Where would you have this?
I don't know. I saw about a 2,000 square foot place in Santa Cruz that I'd like to possibly rent, and but I'm renting a place right now. I'm just barely able to afford that. But I need to maybe work on what I got right now. So, but that's just an idea I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, without ideas, there'd be no civilization. There'd be nothing without people's ideas. Without out of the question kinds of things. Just feeling like you're getting somewhere, and the frustration of how long it takes for people to respond. Corporations, how long... they're in control. I mean, what are we going to do? We got to change everything completely before some of this stuff's ever going to work. Because we're trying to change society and use the same old paradigm. People can't, you know, can't really participate because they feel defeated before they get started. Mm-hmm. There's got to be other solutions, and that's what living closer to the earth is about, and eco village time, and where you combine efforts instead of trying to struggle single-handedly. It's better to get like resources, like minds, like energies, and allow individuality to exist in places that are safe and have no threat from being, you know, compromised by any kind of law enforcement or earth catastrophe, where everyone will work together no matter what happens, and that's the bond. So, if you had any final comment about that.
Yeah, less. It's the new more.
All right. And we've been talking here somewhat together. This is Xavier, who's a local, energized, very creative person in the community. And I'm Coral Reef. So I think I'm going to say... that I'm going to end the show, but as I end it, I met this musician on the street today, and I have some music I'll put on. Hope you've enjoyed it, and you're listening to 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. Coral Reef. Let's see here. Hmm.